If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
This is Words Matter with Norm Ornstein.
We've got the votes and screw the rest of you.
And Dr. Kavita Patel.
These might be some of the smaller moments, you know, with all the bombshells. Didn't catch people's eyes.
Hello and welcome to Words Matter from the DSR Network. Each week, Norm Ornstein and I will talk about the issues facing our country as we enter another, what seems like never-ending election and news cycle. Norm, I'm a bit under the weather. I know you and your wife have also been probably stricken with the same virus that is going around in my household. So for listeners, I'm going to give an immediate advance alert that there'll be a lot more Norm Ornstein talking, which is not a bad thing in my mind because I love listening to him. But Norm, we've had a lot happen this week, yet my brain has been in a fog. So why don't you catch me up to date on what's hit your radar? And I know I wanted to talk to you about just some of what's been in the news unfolding, ongoing unfolding between kind of the Biden White House's relationship with Muslim and Arab American leaders and how that's kind of playing in, especially during this holy month of Ramadan. So very curious, Norm, what's hit your radar to talk about?
So just for a minute, Kavita, one of the things that happened this week, it happened in Easter week, was multiple attacks on Joe Biden from Donald Trump, Speaker Mike Johnson, and a slew of others for two things. One was no religious symbols on Easter eggs for the Easter egg roll that takes place, which, of course, as it turns out, has been the policy of the egg community for decades, including when Trump was president. The other was Biden on Easter issued a whole series of proclamations, but one was for trans awareness, and it happened to fall on March 31st, which is what it has been for the last 15 years, that this was the first time that Easter was on March 31st. But he was attacked for basically distorting Easter. And to have him attacked by, wrongly, of course, it's a bunch of lies, by Donald Trump at the same time he's hawking his King James version of the Bible to make more money. And I thought the best comment on that came from the outstanding photographer David Hume Kennerly, a picture of Trump saying, "Let us pray, P-R-E-Y." But that sort of struck me earlier this week. But the big thing that struck me this week was the tragic and disastrous Israeli drone strikes that killed seven of Jose Andres's World Kitchen employees, including one American citizen, an Australian, and others. That I think is going to have a profound effect on not just the war, but on the legitimacy of Israel. We know that stuff happens in wars. I've seen lots of people talking about this in terms of the number of instances where the U.S. in Afghanistan and in Iraq did drone strikes that killed innocent civilians and in some cases their own troops. But, you know, to me, that's also a false equivalence. That's not the important thing here. The important thing here is first that Andre's group had been working in close conjunction with Israel and their military, that they had cleared this in advance. They had just dropped off a load of food for people in Rafah. They were traveling on a route they were supposed to be traveling on. They had cars clearly identified on the roof. And what's critical now, and Jose Andres himself, who has been, you know, a saint in so many ways, but also, you know, not condemning Israel along the way, trying just to help people who need food, has now been harshly critical and said that this was deliberate because it wasn't one mistaken drone. It was a drone that, in serial order, issued three missiles that destroyed these cars and killed the seven aid workers. And now it's adding to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza because I'm not sure that Andres and the World Food Kitchen had any choice but to pull back. So a large share of the food that was going in to Gaza and other aid organizations are doing the same, won't be there. And, you know, Israel has got to very quickly hold those who did this accountable. Finding out whether this was something that was agreed to by the top leadership. The rules of engagement are that the top military has to approve strikes, but there are all kinds of suggestions that the commanders on the ground are freelancing. And we need to find out what happened, and those accountable, those who did this have to be held accountable. That's one part of it. But obviously, it puts Joe Biden and the Biden administration in an even more difficult position. And it puts Israel in a very bad place. I was just reading this morning the newsletter from an Israeli and an American, Daniel Gordas, who writes some very smart stuff from there about how this could be a pivotal moment in the delegitimization of Israel itself. It's and it's going to have a big impact on what happens in the conduct of the war going forward. So for Biden, who's caught between a rock and a hard place, and we know that the policy of the administration has basically been to try to work from the inside to convince Netanyahu and his government to operate within boundaries and not to succumb to what the most radical, thuggish ministers in his cabinet want. But he's getting screwed coming and going on this front. And that we also this week sent or agreed to send more fighter planes and 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. Through all of this, while bad stuff is happening, just not looking good. And then we know, and something that I hope you'll talk about a little bit until your voice gives out and I'll take over, the meeting that Biden had at the White House with a number of Muslim American leaders.
Yeah, Norm, I'm prepping my voice for it. For all listeners, salt water gargling with hot water actually does work. So but it keeps you going for like 20 minutes, I've found, and then croak back up. So if folks haven't had a chance, because there's just too much news sometimes to digest, and if Norm Ornstein himself can't digest all of it, then, you know, mere mortals who try to keep up could definitely not. But what caught my attention, mostly because there's a friend of a friend, a physician colleague who's a volunteer who was actually cited in some of the articles that both NBC News and the Washington Post had kind of early reporting on what was supposed to be a private meeting between Muslim leaders that genesis of this meeting was that the White House traditionally during Ramadan reaches out to parts of the Muslim community and invites them for the iftar dinner, breaking of the fast each night at sundown. And in this case, instead of an invitation for a dinner, they requested a policy meeting to talk about issues in the Middle East and what's unfolding, as Norm accurately described, where it feels like there's not only no accountability, but there is this kind of complicit nature of what the United States is supporting that is leading to that inaccountability, meaning we're supporting Israel in its, you know, kind of indefensible lack of accountability. And so that's the meeting context. Six leaders, one of whom has come out on the record and said that during that meeting in the NBC News reporting specifically, she's a physician who works on hospital aid in Gaza and was administering care and had brought photos of some of the, like, just what the state of the humanitarian crisis is. By the way, both Palestinians, Israelis, it's kind of agnostic. Everybody is affected by this in that region. It's not one or another. But she brought photos, to which the president said, "I've already seen those photos." And she pointed out, "These are from my phone." So these were not AP reports or something that was given to the press. These are from her own personal phone. And I think what it reflected, and she used, these are her words, that it reflected the dismissive nature of this White House. And I think that that is exactly the sentiment that's being felt. Not only have you seen this in Michigan with kind of a senseless killing of a Muslim child and an Arab American child, and then in other settings, kind of the tensions that have been rising between, like, Jewish and Muslim communities. And then I think on top of that, I think the World Central Kitchen, the aid attack and all the kind of consequences of it have now led to this, like, I don't know, Norm, it feels like this is one of those moments where, and I'm trying to make a reflection, you're a great historian, I'm trying to think of other times. I can think of Bush, 9/11, George W. Bush. I can think of Obama. You know, I don't want to equate any of these circumstances to each other, but I'm trying to think of moments in time when presidents helped to shift kind of the mood of a nation into something that's more productive, where it feels like there's nothing and now there's something. And I'm going to be honest with you right now, Norm, the person winning that award in my mind is Jose Andres. Like, I will say, when he was nominated for the Nobel Prize, when was that, Norm? It was, I forget.
2 years ago, but it should
2 years
be.
Ago. Thank you.
It happens every year now. And yeah.
So he was nominated before, and I think many of us were like, you know, this is a guy that's doing a lot of truly humanitarian. I mean, this is not someone who's, quote, you know, promoting a brand. He's really trying to feed the world. Like, I don't think it's very confusing to people what he's trying to do. And I think he met that moment. Like, he basically, in a New York Times, I read every word of his New York Times op-ed, which, if listeners haven't, I encourage them to read it. I think it's out in print today. I read it online yesterday. I have read every single word, and it was a masterclass in doing what I was just trying to remind myself when presidents have done this, taking a moment when you think there's no ability to meet the common ground and you find a common ground. Like, and I think he did it. And I was waiting for Biden to do it, not in this inside meeting, not in the private meeting, but at some point. And I haven't seen it, Norm. And I'm going to say, like, not just on behalf of, like, you know, Muslims, Arab Americans, Indian Americans, Pakistanis, like anybody who kind of is sitting and feeling like, is this White House, like, really care about me? Let's be clear, Donald Trump doesn't. So I'm not trying to make a point about this is not our guy and Biden's not our guy. I'm more reflecting just deep disappointment that if in 2024 he doesn't understand what about that comment and how that felt in that moment was dismissive, and doesn't see that that was a problem, then we have a real problem. I mean, it's so, Norm, your thoughts. I the reason I'm struggling with it so much is that I think that we can all agree, like, nobody should be starving. I just don't understand. Like, I could care less about religion or politics or identity. Like, starving and denying healthcare to people when we have so much more modern capacity than that is not what the United States stands for. So I feel like in that moment, the answer should have been, you know, I've seen these before, but like, I don't ever want to see pictures like this again. What can I do? You know, like what can I do? What can we do with the might of the United States? And yeah, so I'll stop. How do you respond to not just that moment, but that comment I'm making about Jose Andres's feel, like he's filling that void right now for what we need in the country? Am I being unfair? Are you seeing reflections of that from the White House? Should I attribute? Is Jamie Raskin, who is saying the kinds of things we need to hear right now?
We are seeing it from others. And, you know, let me give Biden a tiny bit of the benefit of the doubt here. I don't think he was being dismissive. I think what he was trying to say is, I know I share your concern. I've seen photos like this, but he didn't say that. And it's easy to see why it would be offensive when it's pictures you've taken yourself. I mean, Jose Andres is an amazing human being, and you're absolutely right. He's the one setting the standard here. And, you know, what he said yesterday after his initial comments, but basically saying these were targeted. And it's hard to avoid that conclusion. It's one thing if you have one drone that mistakenly kills innocent people. And, you know, we had earlier in this war, Israelis killing their own hostages, which was, you know, indefensible. We've had instances. There are things like the fog of war. Three separate missiles set off from a drone in serial order, hitting first one car, then a second car, then a third car. You can't say that that was just one little error. There's something more going on here. Now, I do think what Andres was doing and what the World Central Kitchen was doing and what other aid groups was doing was actually turning the corner on getting large amounts of aid in and food in to, you know, fend off mass starvation. Now that's gone. And if Israel does not step up and dramatically increase food and water going into Gaza and finding ways, even if it's not through World Central Kitchen or the other aid organizations, to get it to people in need, we're going to have not just a humanitarian disaster, but it'll have reverberations elsewhere. And I will say that if I were Joe Biden at this point, especially after this meeting, I would want to give a significant speech, an address, talking about both what you're doing in pursuing American policy towards this war in Gaza, what you expect and are planning to have happen as we go forward over the next couple of months. And there's a pretty good chance that this war goes on at least into the summer months and perhaps even further. They're not going to go into Rafah right away, knowing what the catastrophe could occur. You need to talk about that, and you need to talk about your recognition of the humanitarian disaster that's taking place. He needs to get out front on this. And I think the expectation in the White House, and I do believe that mostly what Biden has been doing up till now has been, never mind the politics, I'm going to pursue a foreign policy objective and try and do it in the best way for America's national interest and more broadly. You can't do that anymore. And you can't count on or hope for an outcome well before the election that might allay the concerns of people who have very legitimate concerns. It's frustrating, I have to say, because if what this does is to end up shifting a lot of votes in a fashion that could allow Donald Trump to win, then we're going to see a Muslim ban. We're going to see encouragement of violence. We're going to see anti-Muslim rhetoric. We have Christian nationalism that's going to point the finger at Muslims. You know, we'll probably have more Sikhs killed the same way as we did after 9/11. With dumb people and monstrous people who don't care They just see somebody who looks different from them and they're going to go ahead and shoot them. So the consequences are, very, very big for people who have an understandable anger and antipathy towards the administration right now. And it's not that you act simply on the basis of politics, but it's not just politics. It's also serious humanitarian concern that we have to have. We have to find a different way forward and out of this. And the president has to address this more directly, I believe.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you ended with a little bit of a president. I'm going to start calling these norms presidential prescriptions because that's what they are. And they're good ones. I think, by the way, I wouldn't even be upset about him sending out any and all of his kind of emissaries, you know, whether it's Kamala Harris. Like at this point, I say there is no lack of attention to this issue that would be overkill in my mind. Like this is just and especially again, like I can't stress enough, like how there is just a time and a place and a moment. And you're right. That's why I kind of preface my comments, Norm, with I wouldn't want anyone to kind of take this as a, okay, so we're criticizing Biden. Well, what choice do we have? That to me is like false premise. Of course, I'm going to support Joe Biden for his real. Of course, this is like not a, well, I'm done now with the Democrats. It is more of a reflection of like, if this is the best we have, we're in trouble. And that's where my concerns of how much time, it just feels like the tone deafness and if there's any truth to some of the reporting around, you know, Middle East visits to Saudi Arabia being canceled, or maybe there's concerns that if, you know, the United States has any citizens on the soil, that they will face kind of reprimand, which is possible, Norm, which is completely plausible at this point. That also is like a very dire circumstance. If countries like Saudi Arabia, with which we've had ups and downs and tensions across history, but if we're at a stage where we're not even able to kind of conduct diplomatic visits to some degree, or that there's a concern because security risk is so high, well, this is even more of a crisis. And that's part of, again, I'm not sure if that reporting has been confirmed, but nevertheless, it wouldn't shock me if we've had White House or State Department officials that have said, you know, planned visits to Saudi Arabia need to be delayed or canceled at this time, that type of thing.
I will say also, Kavita, that, you know, we're getting a lot of pushback from many prominent Democrats like Chris Van Hollen saying it's time for us to put conditions on the arms going to Israel. And you can put conditions where you provide, you know, defensive weaponry and put some conditions on the offensive stuff. A part of the reason we haven't seen this is the fear that we have, and it's a legitimate fear, of this escalating into a much broader war, a fear that Iran, through its proxies, including Hezbollah, and you know, keep in mind that in the north, in Lebanon, Hezbollah has 150,000 rockets, including many sophisticated and powerful ones that could just devastate Israeli cities, and you could have a war on three or four fronts, and it could escalate into a nuclear war with Iran. And so I think there's an effort to make sure that there is no sense that Israel doesn't have the weaponry to deal with this. But you cannot go on when you see what triggered me last week, which we talked about, which was Ben-Gvir expanding settlements in the West Bank, which was basically saying, if you think there will be any prospect down the road of a Palestinian state, which is a requirement for Saudi Arabia to normalize relations with Israel and is a requirement to leading to some kind of long-term stability in the region, you can forget about it. If we don't respond to things like that and don't respond to what happened this week, we're going to find ourselves isolated even among our allies, and it's not a good thing. We have to figure out a different approach to dealing with this conflict.
Yeah, I agree. And in the meantime, I think we can end our podcast on a like a bit of a just a remembrance that it's not just the 7 aid workers, but so many lives, including what started in October is a terrorist event that has now unfolded into exactly, in a way, Norm, sadly, what they wanted, just an ongoing kind of rip a knife into the hearts of so much of a part of the world that I think, you know, I know just has so much sentiment, history, and value for so many people that it's just an incredible time. And hopefully during this holy month and during so much of what billions of people are doing around the world and fasting, that we can hold some hope that light, the reason that kind of these like religious times exist, is so that people can pause and reflect. So I know on behalf of Norm and myself, I know we're kind of thinking about positive, how we can get out from this and channel. I think your exact words are so true, Norm, like that there has to be some very clear language that comes from our leadership. And we're hearing some of that from our leaders, but not enough. So thank you to our listeners. As always, if you can, please share this episode. Join us as a member. Membership will help you get access to our next conversation, where we're going to talk about judges. And Norm's going to tell us, give me, since I've been out sick a little bit, kind of what's been happening in the world of judges. And I'm very excited to hear about some of our future. We're going to be working on some future pods around the media, as we've talked about, and just holding media accountable. So if you like this one or want more of our conversation, become a member, share this episode. Words Matter is a production of the DSR Network. Our executive producer is Chris Kotnor, and the producer of Words Matter is the great Riley Fessler. The next episode of Words Matter will be in your podcast feeds around April 11th. See you then.